From the Danker's studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Ross Chambliss. With a study this week showing that even hands-free, voice-controlled phone systems can distract drivers and cause accidents, today we'll review Utah's laws on phones and automobiles.
If your wheels are not turning and you are stopped at a light and you're going to push a button or you're going to send a text, that's fine. Once your car is in motion, though, do put the phone down, continue your route wherever you need to drive to, or again, just pull over and make it.
That story and what Alta Ski Area continues to do to protect their patch of forest from bark beetles and today's top local headlines coming up on The Rundown here on KCPW. But first, this news from the BBC. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Ross Chambliss, sitting in for Roger McDonough, who's away today. Coming up, a refresher on Utah's laws regarding cell phones and driving, and how Alta Ski Area is monitoring for bark beetle outbreaks. But first, a summary of today's top local headlines. The U.S. Supreme Court's decision not to take an appeal of Utah's gay marriage case means that a parallel lawsuit brought by gay and lesbian couples who sued the state over its decision not to recognize their marriages has been resolved, too. Utah Attorney General's Office spokesman Missy Larson said today that the state will drop its appeal before the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals of a May decision from a federal judge who sided with the gay spouses in ruling Utah must grant benefits to those couples. That decision was put on hold pending appeal, but on Monday, state officials ordered agencies to begin recognizing all same-sex marriages performed in Utah. The people who sued were among 1,000 gay and lesbian couples who married in Utah in December. Utah's Attorney General and Governor will release a report Tuesday afternoon that reviews the state's legal commitments to the Common Core education standards. Amid rising anger and protest from some parents, teachers, and others, Governor Gary Herbert requested the legal review this summer. Herbert has said he believes the national guidelines are working for the state, but he wants to resolve disputes over the standards. In addition to the legal review, Herbert has asked a committee of education experts to weigh in on the standards. The governor's office has also created a webpage to accept public comments about the standards. The Salt Lake Tribune reports Herbert has said Monday that more than 7,000 comments have been submitted. State school officials have released the names of 4 candidates to serve as the next superintendent of Utah Public Schools. The State Board of Education says the finalists are Georgia State Superintendent John Barge, Granite School District Superintendent Martin Bates, former Wyoming Department of Education Director Richard Crandall, and Ogden School District Superintendent Brad Smith. The Utah School Board says the candidates will be interviewed Thursday afternoon in a session open to the public and will name a new superintendent several days after the interviews. The new state school's chief will replace former Superintendent Martel Menlove, who retired in March. And finally, if you're an early riser, a clear Wednesday morning sky should provide an intriguing lunar spectacle. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham talked to Utah's NASA Solar System Ambassador Patrick Wiggins to find out more.
Earlier in the year, you said that this would be a great year for eclipses, and it looks like October will be a great month for eclipses. Can you tell us what's going on tonight?
Yeah, actually, well, tomorrow morning, to be specific, Wednesday morning, we're going to have a total eclipse of the moon. Since it's happening so close to Halloween, I'm kind of thinking that maybe it can be a zombie watch or something like that. But, yeah, starting at about a little after 3, the moon will start to move into the shadow of the Earth, and then it'll get smaller and smaller. And then eventually, by about 4:24 or thereabouts, it will be completely covered by the Earth's shadow. At that time, we have no idea what it's going to look like. It really depends on the atmosphere here at Earth. Believe it or not, the atmosphere bends some of the light around the Earth onto the moon, and occasionally we'll get a kind of a yellow total eclipse. Sometimes it's orange, because this one's so close to Halloween, I'm hoping for blood red. And then, or it could disappear entirely. That's kind of unusual, but that is a possibility. And that'll last up through about 5:20 or so. And by that time, the main show will be over. People can go to bed or go to work or whatever.
So it's kind of a celestial mood ring, then. It can be yellow, it can be orange. We don't know yet.
Yeah, and the only way to know is to get up or stay up very early tomorrow morning and go out and look. Now, if you want to see the colors at their best, of course, you do want to be away from the city light pollution. If you get too much lights in the area, that's going to kind of spoil the view. But you'll still be able to see the partial phases, and even in downtown Salt Lake during a total, sometimes there's still some of it visible. But really, the best view is away from the light pollution of any city.
And again, that was NASA Solar System Ambassador Patrick Wiggins with KCBW's Ryan Cunningham. And by the way, a solar eclipse in Utah is just a couple weeks away. Expect that eclipse to occur on Sunday, October 23rd. A new study released on Monday and conducted by AAA and the University of Utah found that drivers need not simply hold their phones to be distracted by them. Analyzing the behavior of 162 volunteer drivers, researchers found that voice-activated technology, such as Siri on the iPhone, is still a significant distraction. This past May, amendments to Utah's distracted driving laws went into effect. Those amendments don't bar hands-free or voice-activated devices outright, but they do restrict what motorists are allowed to do while driving. So what can drivers do and what can they not do? KCPW's Ryan Cunningham filed this report in May, and we thought it would be a good refresher for those of you now commuting home.
We've all had that moment. You're out driving around, your phone buzzes in your pocket. You want to take it out and take a look at that text message from your friend, but something's telling you it's best to keep your eyes on the road. Well, as of May 13th, that thing compelling you to be a responsible driver is Utah law. At this year's legislative session, Senator Steve Urquhart, well known for his support of LGBT non-discrimination legislation, sponsored a bill amending Utah's distracted driver laws. During floor time in the Utah Senate, Urquhart justified his amendments by saying the current laws were too vague.
Currently, our texting law, it's ambiguous. Police have a tough time enforcing it because they'll pull someone over and they say, it looked like you were texting. And then they can say, well, no, I was playing solitaire. No, I was doing something else on my phone.
Urquhart's bill, now a law, obviously wouldn't allow for drivers to play solitaire. But it adds a little more detail as to what's allowed and what's not allowed.
This law tightens it up to say that you can hold your phone up to your ear. You can access a phone number. You know, you can use your Siri. Of course, if it's in your car, you can use it. And it does allow you to use a global positioning satellite to look for locations. Those are the permissible uses on the phone. So it tightens up. Don't manipulate it. Don't use it for other purposes while you're driving.
SB 253 passed the Senate 17-8. Then the House of Representatives 41-28 before being signed into law by Governor Gary Herbert. So where does that leave you? What if you're dialing a phone number? Can a police officer pull you over? What if you're at a red light or stuck in traffic? As with many laws, it's up to law enforcement to make sure those laws are being obeyed. In this case, the Utah Highway Patrol began enforcement of the updated distractor driver law with an interesting initiative. On Tuesday, UHP officers hitched rides with semi-truck drivers and attempted to spot drivers spending a little too much time on their mobile devices. According to the Associated Press, around 150 drivers were issued warning tickets, while six drivers faced fines of up to $100. Will the Trucker Trooper Alliance continue to fight distracted driving in the future? Trooper Jelaine Hawks of the UHP wasn't sure.
I haven't heard any information about them continuing that type of enforcement. I think it was kind of an initial kickoff to promote a lot of education among drivers about the new law. But really, the enforcement will not really change much in the sense of just within our normal scope of our duties.
So if you're on your iPhone or iPod or iPad and you're swerving all over the road, expect to get pulled over, just like before May 13th. But Hawk says, here's the important difference.
Previously, before the changes were made to this law, if we saw someone in a vehicle that was manually operating their cell phone or a tablet and the vehicle was in motion, we could stop them and, you know, we could talk to them about texting and driving. But then they could say, well, I wasn't texting and driving. I was dialing a phone number, or I was checking my email, or, you know, something along the lines, because it was really specific to texting.
So no longer can you get away with that little white lie. I wasn't texting, officer. I was merely playing solitaire. This time around, you'll get a ticket. The law, as written, specifically bars the following while driving: writing, sending, or reading an instant message or electronic email, that means email, dialing a phone number, accessing the internet, viewing or recording a video, or entering data into a handheld wireless communication device. The maximum fine for doing any of those things while driving is $100. But driving on the highway is a little different than driving on the streets in town. And as Detective Veronica Montoya of the Salt Lake City Police Department points out, the priorities for a municipal officer might be different from those of a state trooper.
You know, our patrol officers are really busy going from call to call. It's kind of one of those things, like I said, as a patrol officer, if I came next to somebody and saw them doing it, that's probably more. Or if I got a complaint from the public, it'd be a follow-up thing. I think we're more, because we're in the city, we're going to different types of calls. We're not out just enforcing traffic. Now, our traffic officers may be doing that. That's something that they would look at. But I think your day-to-day officer, you know, is really going to call the call, and you'd have to make it pretty obvious that you were definitely not paying attention on the road and texting.
So here's a question. What if I'm at a red light? Can I text my friend back then?
If your wheels are not turning and you are stopped at a light and you're going to push a button or you're going to send a text, that's fine. Once your car is in motion, though, do put the phone down, continue your route wherever you need to drive to, or again, just pull over and make your call or whatever you need to do. Going 65 miles an hour on the freeway and texting at the same time is very dangerous. So if you can wait until you're at a full stop, that's all we're asking our public to do.
And Trooper Hawks echoes that sentiment, that this new law is really just about common sense.
There can't be any text or email that is so important that it's worth you dying or you killing someone else. But it's just absolutely, I don't think anybody could say that there was any email or text they've ever received that would be worth that price to pay.
Hawks advises to all drivers that they remove the temptation of their phones entirely by silencing phones and stowing them out of reach before operating a car. But if you do dare to pull your phone out while on the road, a $100 fine could be coming your way, assuming something less fortunate doesn't happen instead. For KCPW News, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
And you're listening to The Rundown on KCPW. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Ross Chambliss, sitting in for Roger McDonough. Millions of acres of evergreen forests across the West continue to suffer an epidemic of bark beetle infestations. And entomologists, or bug scientists, are still laboring to see what, if anything, can be done to save remaining stands of western evergreen forests from the beetle epidemic. Several years ago, when Alta Ski Area, up Little Cottonwood Canyon, discovered their own beetle problems on the edge of the Wasatch Front, they turned to innovative technologies to monitor the health of their trees. This is a story I produced in the fall of 2012 for KCPW's partnership with Explore Utah Science.
Balancing on a steep ridgeline overlooking Utah's Alta Ski Area, Mara Olivos clutches a GPS device and a large tape measure. Olivos, an ecologist with Alta, records data while one of two graduate researchers screws a tree core sampler into a tall and gnarled limber pine to find its age.
At least 100.
Oh, that's good.
100 years?
Yeah.
The evergreen trees clustering up here at the top of Little Cottonwood Canyon, east of Salt Lake City, look mostly healthy, but on this day last July, Olivos says they're finding 1 to 2 bark beetle infestations of their Engelmann spruce and limber pines each year.
We're in flight season right now, so beetles are out and about looking for trees to infest.
It's difficult to see the tiny beetles burrow into the trees. They're only 1/8 to 1/3 inch long, but they leave telltale signs like boring dust, and sap will ooze from the trunk. Within a year of an attack, the tree's needles will turn yellow to red. To protect their trees, Alta gets a helpful little tool from the Forest Service. On the trunks of their biggest and oldest limber pines, they've stapled what looks like a little white tea bag. These pouches are actually a chemical pheromone called verbenone that simulates a scent the mountain pine beetles use to communicate with each other, to say, there's no room at the inn.
And they've got multiple sort of scents they send out. One is vacancy here, you know, come to this tree and inhabit it and let's proliferate. And, but they also have a no vacancy pheromone, and we go and we choose the trees that we want to protect the most, and we put those verbenone packets on.
Mountain pine and spruce beetles are native insects. Their role is to thin out aging or sick trees. But in recent decades, beetle attacks are occurring with more intensity, even on healthy trees and across different ecosystems. Beetles infested more than 600,000 acres of Utah forests last year. Some blame poor management that's left forests dense and therefore more vulnerable. But scientists also point to climate change, saying winters aren't getting cold enough to kill the beetles, allowing their populations to swell. And forest managers say they don't have enough resources to protect every forest.
Whether it's ski resorts, campgrounds, where we're inviting the public up in the forest. Those are the areas that we can actively manage for bark beetles.
Darren Blackford is an entomologist with the Forest Service. He says anti-aggregant pheromones, like verbenone, can help to protect various pine and fir species, but not Engelmann spruce.
We don't have a good one for spruce beetle.
Engelmann spruce grows at high altitudes and is the most plentiful tree in Alta's canopy. Insecticide sprays can help the spruce, says Blackford, but they can harm watershed areas.
We've had recent research projects where we've collaborated with Forest Service Research and even the suppliers to try to come up with an anti-aggregant pheromone that would work well, but so far we've struck out.
Alta was a mining town 100 years ago, and the boom left the mountainsides ravaged and deforested. So the ski resort is protective of any older trees they still have. Every year they recruit volunteers to plant thousands of seedlings to nurture their forest and help it diversify. And they train ski patrollers to look for signs of beetle attacks. But closely monitoring all the trees in the forest can be difficult on foot. That's why 2 years ago, Olivos teamed up with biologist Tim Brown to photograph Alta's canopy using high-resolution time-lapse cameras called Gigapan.
What the Gigapan does is it allows you to capture the pixels from any location on the mountain so that you can go there, you know, from the comfort of your desk and look at them and see, you know, what's going on that particular tree.
The program that Brown says is unique to Alta so far lets employees pull up photos from different times of year and zoom in close to study changes in individual trees. Brown says the idea is to detect any discoloration of pine needles early on and stop infestations before they worsen. And just 4 Gigapan cameras can cover 70% of the Alta area.
You know, when you're doing field work, you train an observer and they go out and take their observations and come back. But if they see something that's anomalous, you don't know if that's just because they weren't paying attention or they made a mistake or if it was actually a valid observation. And so one of the things I think is really great about this kind of data set is that it's really easy to verify it. So, you know, you can double check all your data in a way that everyone can look at it and agree that you're seeing the same thing.
The Forest Service is photographing forest canopies from airplanes, but that has its limitations. Aerial photographs can't always detect when or if certain trees have already been infested, says Blackford.
When we're seeing fading trees from the air, those beetles are already in there, and it's almost too late at that point to protect those trees from dying.
By replicating Alta's approach with the Gigapan, Blackford says, forest managers might be able to catch infestations earlier and save pockets of still healthy trees. And that, says Olivos, is exactly why these tree guarding tools are critical to Alta.
Every tree has taken about 50 to 100 years to grow. If we lose trees, we have decreased water quality, increased avalanche danger. If it wasn't for these incredible slopes, the incredible climate, and the wildlife, we would have nothing. We wouldn't have a ski area.
Olivos hopes that skiers shushing through these trees will come to learn what it takes to keep the slopes green, or, so to speak, that skiers can see the imperiled forest for the trees. In Alta, Utah, I'm Ross Chambliss.
That story was produced for KCPW and Explore Utah Science about 2 years ago. Alta's efforts to preserve their patch of forest continues today, and you can find a link to photos of Alta Ski Area's ongoing gigapan surveillance of their forests at exploreutahscience.org and at kcpw.org. Also, stay tuned for another story next week by Explore Utah Science for the Follow the Flow series on the challenges Utah water managers face for balancing agricultural water interests with Utah's growing urban population. I'm Ross Chambliss, and you're tuned into The Rundown. Stay with us. Thanks once again for tuning in to The Rundown this afternoon. Our show was produced by Roger McDonough with additional help from reporter Ryan Cunningham. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Join us every weekday evening at 5 p.m. for The Rundown here on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks once more for listening, and stay tuned now for the Utah Business Report and Marketplace.